It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Dr. Kenneth Rosenberg has spent most of his career dealing with cheaters. He helps couples overcome cheating, and he deals with the controversial issue of sex addiction. His new book, Infidelity, Why Men and Women Cheat, looks at the lives of many of his clients, with their permission, of course. Dr. Rosenberg, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
From a biological standpoint, let's just jump into this here. From a biological standpoint, why do people cheat?
Well, people cheat for many reasons, probably psychological above all else. Mm. In terms of the biology, everyone has different biological drivers, right? We all know about testosterone, that is the hormone that affects men and women and that drives sexual desire. There are other neurohormones or even neurotransmitters which have a huge influence. That's dopamine. You know, we all know about that. That's mm-hmm. the reward center chemical that lights up our brain when we see something we're excited about. There's vasopressin and oxytocin. Those are the chemicals of social bonding, which is super interesting to me. You know, you take animals and you see why they socially bond, why the 3% of mammals that mate for life do so. It often has to do with the vasopressin and oxytocin receptors in their brain. So there are a number of biological reasons, but when people say, why do people cheat? I say there are many reasons, but for better or for worse, often they cheat just because they can.
Would it be worth it for people to get like a DNA thing to see if they have like longer dopamine genes or something like that?
Right. Right. With a marriage test, you get a dopamine test. You know, we're not really at that point biologically to be able to do that. And someday we will. And hopefully when that day comes, you know, we'll be able to interpret the data. Because, you know, I'm an addiction psychiatrist. I deal with people who have vulnerabilities to all kinds of addictions, opiates, gambling, sex, food. And that doesn't mean that, you know, that pardons the person or, you know, enables the person to say, well, I just can't help it. I'm going to, you know, shoot heroin. But it does mean that we, you know there are certain things that we're up against. And we're up against, some of us are up against a little bit more in one thing or another.
We want to hear from callers this morning, 800-642-1234. Cheating is universally reviled, yet about half of the people in couples do it. What do you think? Are people just made for multiple partners? Can monogamy flourish over the long term? 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Dr. Rosenberg, does evolution play a role here?
Well, of course, because we were evolved with two competing mandates, right? Where on the one hand, we have the mandate or the desire to socially bond. We need to live together, and we often need to stay together to at least rear one or two offspring. We also need to procreate, and we like novelty. We like newness. We also like to diversify our gene pool. So we tend to be biologically attracted to people who are different from us. So social bonding, procreation, often these drives work in harmony. But, you know, they're like overlapping circles, right? Sometimes they work in harmony, sometimes they work at odds. So when people have been married for 20 years, the desire for novelty, the desire for newness, the desire for procreation, even after their procreation years may have passed, you know, still, these drives still remain and may work at odds with their desire to socially bond and stay together.
Now, some people say that, you know, a couple has been married for 15, 20 years. They need some variety. They have trust in their relationship. And so they open up their relationship. Is this a good idea, do you think, or a bad idea?
You know, I think it's a fine idea, but my job is not to tell people what to do and to sort of tell them what morality or what religious, spiritual followings or teachings they should adhere to. My job is to say that's a very reasonable plan, but be aware when you, quote, open up, end quote, the marriage, you also may be opening yourself up for a boatload of trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have a rule that, well, you know, you could have one other partner, but they can't be your primary partner. They can't replace me. You know, but people have sex, and they often fall in love, and they have passionate feelings that follow or precede sex. So, you know, these are not very easy rules to enforce. You might decide you could have three lovers, but not four. Well, we like what we can't have, right? That's part of what turns us on. The forbidden is what turns us on sexually in particular. So, you know, adhering to the rules is not something that that necessarily turns us on. So it's a little bit at odds with what you're trying to do.
Right.
So I'm not, you know, pro or against monogamy or polyamory or even asexuality. You know, there are many people today who decide, you know, enough of sex. I'm not going to have sex. And that's actually absolutely, you know, their prerogative. My position is just try to be compassionate and understanding to the human nature that you're dealing with in yourself and in your partner.
We are talking with Kenneth Rosenberg, who is a psychiatrist and sex addiction counselor. He has written about cheating, infidelity, why men and women cheat. What's the percentage of men who cheat and women who cheat?
Well, when you're talking about dating people, about 50% of them cheat at some point in their dating careers. But when we're talking about married people who have pledged to be monogamous, about 15% of women and 20% of men cheat. And the numbers are interesting to me as a psychiatrist and as a sort of, you know, as someone who is interested in what trends in society, because the number of men cheating has pretty much stayed the same over the past 20 years at 20%. The number of women over the past 20 years has doubled from about 10% to 15%.
Hmm. And why do you think that is?
Pardon me?
No, go ahead. Keep talking.
And if you look at the under 35 population, it's getting to be pretty neck and neck. So you see that women now with more social agency, economic agency, sexual freedom, sexual agency, if you will, are feeling more empowered, again, for better or for worse, to do just what the men do. And if you look in the animal world, you know, cheating or going on, whatever you want to call it, when you're a rodent and you go off with someone else other than your mate, that happens even more frequently among the female rodents than with the male rodents. So, you know, it's not, you know, everyone talks about cheating as like, well, men got to do this, this is a male thing. That's hogwash, right? Well, and a lot of that is kind of cultural bias and, you know, what we impose on men and women in the culture.
So is this maybe not necessarily about sexual desire so much as it is about feeling like you have power in your life?
That's a great question. You know, when I deal with sexual compulsion, right? I deal with people who have sexual addiction. And what I often say to them is that sex addiction is really not about sex. Often the desire to compulsively be with someone else other than the person you're pledged to be with is a matter of seeking power, seeking validation, seeking some kind of satisfaction, some kind of sense that you're alive. I mean, there are many, many reasons why people, you know, do that. But it's not to have an orgasm, right? Because orgasms last seconds.
Right.
But lusts and affairs and, you know, which are built in our mind can last weeks, months, years.
And can be all-consuming. We are talking about cheating and the science of cheating and sex addiction on The Morning Show. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're exploring the science of sex addiction and asking you for your stories. This may be hard, but have you been cheated on before? Have you cheated? You don't have to tell us your name, but we'd like to know how you feel about it. Is this something that you think that all humans just are made to do and that we're not made to be monogamous? Or do you regret this? Did this have an impact long term on your life? I want to talk to you, Dr. Rosenberg. We'll start this conversation before we go to break about sex addiction. How do you define it?
It's the compulsive desire to have some kind of sexual contact, which essentially destroys your life. So it's not just, you know, you want to have sex with the next-door neighbor or, you know, your long-lost boyfriend or girlfriend, but that you are compulsively seeking out partners and doing so to your detriment and doing so with great remorse and great regret. And the long and short of it is you may be enjoying those few seconds of orgasm, but you're really not enjoying your sex addiction. In fact, it can lead to dreadful results. It can even lead to suicide.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I remember the first time I heard about sex addiction was in the 80s when Boston Red Sox third baseman Wade Boggs said he was an addict when it was discovered that he actually was married to two women. And I was pretty young at the time, but I thought, that's kind of a convenient excuse. Like, is sex addiction really a thing? And when did we decide that that was really a thing? How did we decide?
It's a very complicated question. And, I mean, it really is a thing, and it's a terrible excuse. You know, you can't go to your spouse and say, you know, I'm cheating, I'm going to cheat some more, and just pardon me, you know, avert your eyes because I'm a sex addict.
Right.
That's not going to wash. That's ridiculous. And, of course, you know, we see today or we sense that some celebrities are trying to get out of their, you know, egregious acts of violence against women by saying I was a sex addict. That's ridiculous. But sex addiction is a real thing, and it's a, you know, real addiction. As I say, it's not an excuse. In fact, if you go to the judge, if you're in court, and you say, you know, pardon me, judge, I'm a sex addict, you get a worse sentence. You don't get a better sentence. I'm serious. You know, this is not something that pardons you in the eyes of the law, and I don't think it's something that should pardon you with your partner. But it does, you know, it's the same way if you say you're an alcoholic. It doesn't really free you up to drink and drive and, God forbid, kill someone, but it does free you up to realize you're in trouble and you need help and you need others to help you and you need to surrender to your illness and, you know, all those things that we know from treating addiction. But if nothing else, it is not an excuse. It's not even a convenient excuse. It's a terrible excuse for terrible behavior.
We're talking about cheating with psychiatrist Kenneth Rosenberg. His new book called Infidelity, Why Men and Women Cheat, explores how he helps his clients reunite after cheating. And it also talks a little bit about sex addiction. I know this is a hard task, but please call us and tell us your story of cheating. 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. It's The Morning Show. We're talking about cheating with psychiatrist Kenneth Rosenberg. His new book is called Infidelity, Why Men and Women Cheat. It explores how he helped his clients reunite after cheating. I know this is hard, but give us a call, 800-642-1234, and talk to us maybe about your experiences with cheating, being cheated on, what you think about the notion of monogamy. Is it something that humans are made for? You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lynn from Coloma, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm calling because I guess I'm interested in the monogamy part of it. My husband and I have been married for 43 years.
Good for you.
With no cheating. And I think a large reason for the no cheating part is just STDs, and we're just not interested in having that and going through that. Both on both my husband's side and my side, there's never been a divorce and no cheating that we know of. And my daughters have both married young men whose parents also come from families that there's no divorce. So when you have that wedding dance, I mean, there are people that have been married over 60 years on the floor.
Wow.
And I'm not talking one couple. I'm talking several. So I would just like to look at it, you know, the things we tell our daughters. And one of the things we did tell them was that if you cheat or you divorce or you get involved in all this kind of stuff, you're not going to have a financially stable future. And the more that you're monogamous and you stick with one person, you have more wealth. So I guess that's how we talked about it.
That makes sense. So there's, Dr. Rosenberg, there's a financial incentive for not cheating. There's not getting STDs. And This couple, Lynn, has been married through the time of AIDS, and that was a huge thing. But I also feel like, is there a biological thing that kind of runs through families that there are, that maybe biologically people in certain families are not prone to cheat? And then they select people who are like them. It's sort of a natural selection process.
Right. I think that's a great point. And Lynn, thanks for calling. And congratulations on 43 years.
Yeah, really.
That's quite good. Not to mention 43 years of no STDs. That's even better. So, but all kidding aside, you know, I think that there is something to what you teach your children. And Lynn and her husband, their family, have really taught their children that, you know, that this is, you know, a wrong thing to do. And there's incentives and reasons why, you know, why you ought not do that. It also makes it, you know, it also sheds an interesting light on the fact that women who are more financially secure and who are more, you know, sort of able to leave their husbands without fear of financial ruin are much more likely to divorce and cheat, for that matter. So there is certainly a financial aspect of that. But I do think that, you know, why people cheat has a whole lot to do with learning and a whole lot to do with the values that, you know, Lynn and her husband, their family, have been able to impart to their children. It also is true that, you know, there's probably some biology there that, that as we say, that cheating has, to some extent, a biological driver. It has a large cultural driver, which Lynn has addressed, a large learning driver, a large psychology driver, but also a large biological driver. So it could well be the case that not only is this family culturally inclined to stay monogamous, but also biologically inclined to stay monogamous, for sure.
Interesting. Charlene from Wausau, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. My question, well, is one, how to seek help. I've been in a relationship for 3.5 years, and I've been cheating on my boyfriend, and he's aware, and we're wondering how to move on from this. But prior to that, I was married for 15 years together with my girl's father for 20, and I was completely monogamous, never thought of going outside the marriage, and never thought I'd be divorced. And now I have this boyfriend that is secure and stable. However, I always want to have someone else on the side. And when you had spoke about, you know, having these addictions and then ultimately could end in suicide, you know, I thought, wow, that feels like me.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry to hear that. And thanks for calling, Charlene. What, may I ask, why do you want someone else always on the side, as you say?
Well, you talked about that newness and that exciting factor where you want that, and I always hope for, like, I'm never going to have what I thought was in my marriage, where it was unhealthy after so many years. I don't know, where it's like I can be close but not close enough with someone long term, where I think I get spooked and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And, you know, so having someone on the surface, maybe not to get to know me very well, is a defense. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's very insightful here, what you're saying, and you have a lot of insight about it. You know, without delving, I might say, you know, you might want to talk to a professional about this and get some help to try to understand it. Again, there's nothing wrong with having as many partners as you want, but it sounds like it's not really bringing you the happiness, and you're looking for, you know, new relationship energy, which is wonderful, isn't it? You know, that sense of falling in love, that infatuation that comes with the first kiss and the first encounter, but it's not sustainable. And, you know, many people are looking for that over and over again, and we need to understand, you know, why. What is in our background? What is it that we're experiencing? You know, you ask why people cheat, but one of the many reasons people cheat is because of insecurity. Because they, you know, want validation. They want that kind of validation that comes from the beginning. Or, as you say, Charlene, you know, you're afraid of people getting to know you, perhaps, and that also is a driver. But may I ask, if it's okay to ask, have you spoken to clergy or a psychologist or some kind of therapist who could kind of help you tease this out?
Yeah, well, I did start off before my divorce in EMDR therapy, and it hit really strong where it made me feel disconnected, and I kind of like that because it helped me get through the divorce. It helped me not have any emotion and unplug. But it's hard because I'm unplugged from my children as well. And I do work in a smaller community in the mental health field, so it is a little bit harder to seek that help out.
Right. Well, I know, but it sounds like that help could be invaluable. And, you know, EMDR, you know, what you talk about is a treatment for trauma often, and a treatment that does really help you in some ways separate from the trauma. But also it sounds like what you need is an insight-oriented treatment, if I may say so. You're a therapist or, you know, in the profession, so you know about this. But an insight-oriented therapy, which also looks at your behaviors and tries to give you a way to interrupt your behaviors, because at the end of the day, you're, you know, you sound like a very intelligent person. You know that relationships take compromise, and you know what I write about in my book is that you can't have your cake and eat it too. You know, and whatever the driver that brings you to try to seek something outside of your relationship, new relationship energy, the search for novelty, the search for validation, some kind of insecurity which leads you to do this, you know, you have to kind of address it, because otherwise, it just leads to a whole lot of unhappiness, as I think you've implied.
Charlene, I want to thank you for calling in, and good luck, and hopefully this has helped you kind of move forward a little bit. We are talking about cheating with Dr. Kenneth Rosenberg, who has written a book on cheating. There are different kinds of cheating, Dr. Rosenberg. There's emotional, there's virtual, and then there's physical cheating. I think we all understand the emotional. Talk to us about virtual cheating.
Right. Well, you know, technology has given us new opportunities to cheat that we never even knew existed. You know, you could swipe right, swipe left. You know, when there was an article in one of the London papers about my book, and they interviewed folks, and one woman said, you know, it's easier to find an affair partner than just order a pizza. And I don't know if that's quite true, but it really is easy to get online and find someone who you could cheat with. And that could lead to a physical affair, or that could be just, you know, some kind of sexual engagement where you really get lost in the sort of fantasy and in the connection. And you know, some people think of porn even, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of people do porn late evenings. A lot of guys in particular do porn in the late evenings, and that could be a mistress as well. It could really, you know, take energy away from your primary partner. You could become obsessed with it. It could be something which your partner really pales in comparison to, you know. We talk about emotional affairs, right, where you have a friend who kind of replaces your partner as your most intimate connection, even though there's no sex involved. Well, porn and virtual connections could do that as well.
We are talking about cheating and taking your phone calls, 800-642-1234. Nick from Madison, welcome to the program, Nick.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. A previous caller had talked about talking to her daughters about cheating and the financial consequences of it, and I just wanted to say that there's not necessarily a cookie-cutter reason to that, and that it's necessarily true that, you know, cheating will lead to, you know, more financial downfalls. I have to say that both my wife and I come from houses that are broken apart because of cheating, and we've been married now for 19 years. It's something that we definitely talk about, but both of our parents, all four of our parents, rather, are actually in a much better situation now in a much better financial situation now after the divorces. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the cheating led to that. But there's no cookie cutter explanation for, you know, why people cheat. You know, I think it's already been brought up that it's, you know, some of it is the lack of attention. Some of it is, you know, a sexual addiction, whatever it might be. My wife and I talk about this a lot, and we have always said that, you know, because of the homes that we come from, if one of us ever gets the urge, we talk to each other. And before any of us even go that direction, you know, why would anyone stay in a relationship if they feel that urge to cheat? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily true for everybody. That's just the way it is for us. We saw what it did to our families and how much it hurt us. I have four siblings. My wife has three siblings. And all of them, again, hell of us, have come from homes that are broken because of cheating. But none of us, as far as I know, have cheated. None of us are divorced, just like your first caller. You know, we come from broken homes, but we haven't gone through that. So again, there's no cookie cutter explanation for it. I did like the explanation about, you know, you want to avoid the STDs, obviously. but it's I think if a couple can have a conversation about it and not shy away from it, I think it can strengthen the relationship. It's almost self-counseling.
Thank you for that, Nick. I have to tell you, Dr. Rosenberg, one of the things we're talking about STDs and talking about AIDS, there were reasons that men and women cheated on their heterosexual spouses before it became kind of okay in our culture to be gay, because they were cheating. They were suppressing their sexuality.
Right, of course, yes.
So Caleb from Cashton, welcome to the program, Caleb.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So what's your question?
So I'd been in a relationship with my partner for a couple of years, and it was going really good, and we had a child together, a beautiful daughter. And then about 6 to 8 months ago or so, I found out that pretty much throughout the course of the relationship, she had been on Facebook with other partners that she had had from her past. She just recently moved back to the area. She'd spent a good portion of her life out somewhere else. And so then, you know, I decided I needed to separate from that because it hurt. It was painful. She hadn't told me about it. But, you know, I have a child with her, and I obviously still love her. And it was hard to make that separation. And the whole time she was telling me, you know, oh, you're the only one, and I want to be with you, and all of this. And, you know, of course I was believing it and considering getting back with her. Only to find out throughout that period of time, she was physically finding other people and not telling me about it. And I managed to find a good, solid friendship relationship with her. You know, we're able to go and do things together with our daughter, but the whole situation has caused this ability with me to not really find trust and not want to seek relationship because of my, well, you know, oh my gosh, there's going to be finding other people, are they going to be on Facebook, and I don't want to be that guy who's like snooping,
right.
You know, I know I did that, I don't like it. So my question really is if you just have any methods for finding trust, coping with the inability to trust people.
Well, it's a great question. I'm sorry I had to go through that. And Facebook really is a source of people connecting in all sorts of ways. But as we were talking about a moment ago, you know, the virtual venue has enabled people to connect and cheat and, you know, find relationships which they build up in their heads as eye to eyes, which undermine their primary relationship. So it's a common thing that you went through, Caleb, and I'm real sorry you had to go through it, but it sounds like, you know, you guys are really smart and good and kind to each other. So, you know, you have a daughter, so you're keeping all that, your friendship going, so good for you. I think that the caller before, Nick, actually had a good piece of advice, which is whenever something comes up and urges come up, which are natural, that they talk about it. You know, that as everyone said, there's no cookie cutter explanation for this, and there's no sort of easy way out. This is a little bit of, you know, I would argue a little bit of our human nature to want to cheat, to think that the grass is always greener, to think that the old Facebook friend might be the lover who you wish you had. That's kind of, you know, when it happens, it's so horribly hurtful, but it's also very normal. But I think the way out of it, if there is a way, is for couples to be able to talk about it and say, you know, we may long for some other people, so let's talk about it. Let's not act on it necessarily, and let's not criticize each other for those feelings, but let's talk about it and see how we could kind of move past it. So conversation, as simple as it may be, is often the best solution.
I always go back to Jimmy Carter, who has been married to Rosalynn Carter next month for 72 years. Once, when he was president, said that he does lust for people in his heart, but he never acted on those feelings. We have callers coming in, and I would like to get to them. Randy from Ripon, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning. I'm 60 years old. 62, actually, right now, and back in my 30s, I guess what I wanted to bring up, I have mixed feelings about this, what happened, but I was approached by a married woman, and I mean, to this day, it's the strangest thing. I think about these cartoons with a little angel and a little devil on your shoulder, one telling you to do it and one not to, And at the time, I was lonely, you know, and my intuition told me I was going to pay a huge price for this affair. And, I mean, I went off the deep end. I almost succeeded in suicide. It messed me up bad because I never thought I'd be one of those people.
Right. You fell in love.
Well, I heard lost, but I don't know. I went through years of therapy after this.
Good.
But, you know, then there's also this part of me that thinks, you know, I look at it, and I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I look at bonobo chimpanzees and how there is no loyalty to anybody there. I mean, they engage in sexual activity all the time. And I just wonder, you know, not to justify it, but it fascinates me. I mean, are we really... I don't know. You know, there's this maybe part of me that wants to believe that, and that's why I was consumed by so much guilt and shame and the whole nine yards. But that's why I say I have mixed feelings anyways. I would caution, I don't know, you know, it's individual, I guess. Some people can handle that, and I was not one. So with that, I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Randy.
We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We're talking about cheating today, and we've got Dr. Kenneth Rosenberg on for a few more minutes. Kay from Milwaukee, welcome to the program, Kay.
Thank you. My question, I was in a relationship and a marriage that lasted for 30 years, but I found out later that the affairs started within the first year.
Wow.
And I found out when one of the mistresses called me and let me know. But I'm curious. It seemed to me that my ex-husband was amoral. And I wonder if that was, how prevalent is that, that personality disorder with this condition? And is it that was a genetic or a learned behavior?
Right.
Excellent question, Kay.
That's a great question. You know, there are personality characteristics that are associated with those who cheat, and narcissism, which is sort of what you're describing. I think when you talk about amorality, you mean people who just do what they want to do for themselves and think, it's good for me, so what the heck? And that is a condition that we call narcissism, and that is, you know, a sense of being entitled, a sense of being grandiose, a sense of thinking, you know, what you want and how you want it is just fine, even if it doesn't hurt, even if it does hurt someone else, and a lack of empathy for others as perhaps your husband had for you. Those are, personality traits associated with cheating, whether they're biological, whether they're learned, whether they're some combination, whether they're acquired. You know, that's a very, very long scientific question, but without a doubt, they are personality traits that you see among people who cheat often.
So, Dr. Rosenberg, in Kay's case, she was married to a man who was lying to her for 30 years. So I would assume that once she found out about this, she didn't particularly want to work on the marriage. She was pretty much done with this. But what do we say to people? How do we get people to not cheat, to actually work on their marriage, or to come back from a cheating episode to make things stronger?
Right. That's the last third of my book, in fact. There are things we could do, but, you know, we have to be thoughtful. Just as one of the callers said, Nick, I think it was, you know, you have to have a conversation, and you have to be empathic to the other person. And if you discover this is happening, the first thing you do is take a step back, think about what's at stake, think about how you got here, think about what has happened in the relationship, who's done the right and wrong thing in both your parts, you know, both spouses. And really, if you can, get some help. And there's, you know, lots of help from psychologists to clergy to good friends. But that's the last third of the book about what to do to help the situation and, above all else, not make a bad situation that much more traumatic.
Dr. Kenneth Rosenberg has a new book, Infidelity, Why Men and Women Cheat. He is a psychiatrist and sex addiction counselor. And thank you for being with us today, sir.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Next, we're going to talk to a family law attorney about how much cheating can cost, quite literally. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We just explored the science and personalities of cheating. Now we're going to look at the legal fallout. Infidelity is a leading cause of divorce, and it can cause the cheating spouse a great deal of pain. It can actually cost them a great deal of money in many ways. David Kowalski is an attorney who practices family law in Wisconsin. He's also served on the State Bar of Wisconsin's Children in the Law and Family Law section. He sees the people whose marriages Dr. Rosenberg and his colleagues can't save. David, welcome to The Morning Show.
Hello, thanks for inviting me.
So tell me first about the legality of infidelity in Wisconsin.
Well, infidelity is, adultery is actually a felony in Wisconsin. There is a criminal law on the books, but it doesn't appear to be enforced. My knowledge of it is that there's been one attempt to enforce it. I want to say it was back in 1990, and it caused kind of a national stir. It was a situation related to a divorce in northern Wisconsin, and the husband found out, he believed, about an affair and brought the information to the district attorney, who then decided to bring charges. I believe the wife in that case just did some community service, but that's the only time I've seen the law actually even attempted to be enforced.
So if it's not enforced, why is it still a law? Why don't we just get it off the books?
My sense is that it is not an attempt that any of the representatives wish to attach their name to. I have seen it called political suicide to bring a bill to eliminate the felony of adultery. That's my general sense of it, but I think there's just a sort of tacit understanding that we're really not going to enforce this because it's generally viewed as a private matter.
So this gentleman in northern Wisconsin went to the district attorney. Has this ever been used as a bargaining chip during a divorce proceedings? You cheated on me, and that's against the law, and I'm going to go to law enforcement?
I have worked with many spouses who wish to use it as a bargaining chip for obvious reasons, but right. In Wisconsin, we are a no-fault divorce state. And therefore, the personal matters or the personal reasons for the divorce, including marital misconduct like infidelity, doesn't really factor into the equation. There's really only two times when it could. And one is if there is a financial component to it. For example, a spouse who is spending a large amount of money on a boyfriend or girlfriend outside the marriage, and then the other spouse can request that, you know, that money wasn't spent for marital purposes, so I want some reimbursement. The other instance is if there are children and one of the parents has a new partner that may have a negative effect on the children. Those are really the only two legal instances when it can, you know, infidelity can be a legitimate issue in the divorce.
We are talking about cheating right now with lawyer David Kowalski. What are your thoughts on cheating? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Have you been through a divorce? Did cheating come up in that? Have you ever been cheated on? And what was your response? Did your marriage survive it? 1-800-642-1234. Infidelity in divorce, people are getting divorces after finding out just after one cheating offense. Are you finding people who are coming in and saying, I can't take this anymore? Or do you often feel that people are just coming in and saying, we are incompatible, and cheating is a byproduct of this?
Well, I think the general overview is the last statement you made, which is there are issues in the marriage that are generally leading to the infidelity. But anecdotally, I would say that the great majority of times, either the spouse finds out about the first affair and decides that's it, or there generally is a history of it happening, you know, 3, 4, 5 times, and the spouse says, I this was the last straw, the fifth time. It's not so much, you know, the second time that we see people come in. It generally is a longer process if it survives the first go around.
So Dr. Rosenberg was talking earlier about the fact that men and women both cheat, and that women are cheating more and more than they were in history, largely because they're more financially secure. Are you finding that men and women cheat pretty much equally?
I think the statistics that I've seen indicate that there is a larger percentage of the husbands who are cheating. But I haven't found in my practice that it's a really significant difference. Mm. So I think I agree with what the doctor said earlier. The numbers, I suppose, are getting closer, and I would agree with for the reasons that he stated, that perhaps they're just, you know, financially, economically, and socially, there isn't the need or the necessity to remain married at all costs, perhaps for women as there might have been.
So there are a number of people who called in today to talk about growing up with cheating parents and how that's affected them. You practice family law, so you're dealing with kind of the effects that this is having on their kids. What are you seeing there?
Well, we don't see the effects on the kids as adults, but the biggest marker of what is going to positively or negatively affect the children is how the parents get along during and after the divorce. So obviously, if one spouse has had an affair, that's a significant emotional issue, and a lot of people have a very difficult time getting over that, and partly separating the fact that this spouse was mistreating me by having the affair, but they still presumably can be a good parent. And separating out those two components of a person. So if there has been an affair, generally what we try to do is determine if there is a legitimate reason that there's a concern for the children regarding the affair, and if there is, then we address that. But if it's really a matter between the parents, we try to put the parents in a situation that they can individually deal with the fallout from the affair by hopefully not involving the children in that dispute.
So we might consider you a divorce attorney. People come, we sort of have this image in our heads of people on opposite sides of the table spitting venom at each other. Is that generally what you see when you are dealing with people who are getting divorced? Are you seeing more people who are saying, hey, look, we've tried to work this out and we can't?
That I would say the majority of the divorces we see are because people just can't get along for whatever reason. And whether there's infidelity associated with that, that's generally a byproduct of their lack of communication or whatever it may be. There is a segment of the population that really wants their pound of flesh in the divorce. And that's understandable, particularly when there's when there is infidelity.
Segment of the population. Are you speaking specifically of the kind of person who might want this? Or?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, there are some people who really are exceptionally upset about the infidelity. And generally, when they come in to see us and they realize that they're in most cases, there isn't a legal impact for the infidelity. Most people will accept that, and we kind of direct them to different areas to address those issues, you know, family, friends, counseling. But there is a certain element of the client base that that does not get over that very quickly. And that's the difficulty in trying to shield the children and move through the divorce process when one person is having a great deal of difficulty separating out other issues, whether it be financial or child custody things, from the infidelity.
So we're going to end with this. Allison from Milwaukee just called to say she had a 20-year marriage to a partner who was not loyal. She said it rocked her world emotionally and financially, and she kind of wishes that she had been able to prosecute it. So divorce is hard. It has consequences.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely understand the desire to have a consequence, really, because there often isn't a consequence in the divorce.
Right, you just separate.
Yeah, and that is tough to do. But ultimately, I do think the process we have is better than arguing over the personal issues between the spouses in a courtroom. My take on it is the best way to handle an issue of, you know, personal infidelity, et cetera, is by relying on friends and family, clergy, or counseling for certain to help process what's a difficult situation.
And that brings us full circle to our previous guest. David Kowalski is an attorney who practices family law in Wisconsin. He's also served on the State Bar of Wisconsin's Children in the Law and Family Law section. Thank you, David, for being with us today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasso, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Boltina is the executive producer. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Ideas Network.